I've yet to dunk on someone in a pickup basketball game. It's not because I don't have the height. It's because everyone sees it coming.
Everyone sees it coming.
Nice. Welcome up to the Coach Me Up podcast. This is officially episode one. And I'm joined here by my co-host, Zach Zillner, and the guest of honor, Daniel Bach. Daniel, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Yeah. Had a good workout. It's been a fun day so far. Looking forward to chopping it up here.
So, you know, we just like a little review of some of the work that we just did in the workout prior to getting into this pod. A theme that I was picking up on was competition.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have been on podcasts together where that's kind of been like the sole topic of conversation is like how to get that into training.
Yeah. Like get good energy into your workouts.
Right. You know, I know there's a couple of things that you want to talk about, but while it's fresh on my mind, what are some ways that you're able to infuse that into your own training and then training with your athletes?
Well, I struggle to do it a little bit with my own training because I'm most often training alone. That's why I do really like the opportunities that we have to work out together or anytime I get a chance to like work out with a friend or something. When I'm working with athletes, it is a one-on-one situation. So that's where it's, you know, we're tossing a ball for them or we're putting a challenge out in front of them. So then, you know, they're competing with the environment. They're competing against the task, competing against themselves to like beat a number, that type of thing. Yeah, I actually don't really do a lot of, you know, group training. So then that element, you know, you have to sort of manufacture it in other ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where they're, it's a challenge rather than a competition against a person. Yeah.
Dan, not everyone will know who you are, who's listening to this pod. So before we get into the stuff I'm eager to talk about with you, can you tell people a little bit about who you are, your training background, how you got here?
Yeah. So I've told this story a bunch of times, so I'm going to go a real short version of it.
That's fine.
Got really into basketball around age 12. Got into jump training because I wanted to dunk at age 13. Had a lot of success jump training in that like that first year as a 13 to 14 year old and dunked a basketball in eighth grade and got hooked on the process. I had a natural aptitude in like math and science and I started putting that toward like athletic development, towards trying to train my vert and all this stuff. And I was, you know, on the internet trying to learn things. And so kind of got this passion for that training process early on. At age 15, I already wanted to make a career out of it. And here I am 21 years later, age 36, and I have made a career out of it. Got a degree in college, started training people in college, started posting YouTube videos, had a little blog, turned into an online brand. So nowadays I'm in Austin, Texas, training at Acceleration, athletes in a variety of sports, a variety of levels, mostly young athletes, but do get some opportunities with the like college or pro here and there. And then I have online brand Jump Science. I'm one of the guys in the jump training space that people look to for solutions and help and stuff. You know, the dunk camp every year, I'm like a lecturer there. Like they bring me in to give a couple presentations.
You're a pretty big deal.
So like people in the jump training world know me.
People yeah. know me.
I mean, yeah,
they do. It's true.
So yeah, it's been fun to have an impact on the field in that regard.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the place I train here in Austin, Acceleration, it's actually more speed training than jump training. And so, you know, this past coming up on 10 years now, I've gotten a lot into that realm. And I actually really love training track and field athletes. Would like to do that more, actually.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, trying to do more in the speed realm and have more influence there as well. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
So something I picked up on... And, you know, one of the main topics I want to discuss with you today is you talked about how you started jump training young, wanted to dunk at 13, and you did dunk at 13.
It was just after I turned 14.
Okay.
It's like about a month.
That's pretty crazy.
Month and a half, yeah.
In case anyone doesn't have any perspective on that.
I was wild. 6 feet tall. Six
how
feet,
tall are
like
you, man?
6 foot zero.
Yeah. Yeah. The height does matter. So you were in a spurt.
Yes.
For sure. But so, okay, you were able to get a lot of gains in a relatively short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, like incredible gains in a short amount of time. I definitely see that with a lot of the high school athletes that I train. And I feel like that's a consistent thread.
It can be,
correct. Yes. But as we get closer and closer towards, we start getting out of that beginner and intermediate gains phase and things start coming a little more slowly. Mm-hmm. Athleticism, when you get to a certain point, is incredibly hard to improve. If it wasn't,
yes,
we wouldn't have jobs.
Right. And also everybody would be very fast and jump high.
Right. Yeah. So I want to pick your brain on that because it's where you spend all of your time in the space. Mm-hmm. Is run faster, jump higher, throw farther, especially with the track training experience you have.
Yeah.
So can you touch on your experience with actually moving the needle for athleticism?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's one of the things that bothers me with, you know, social media and sort of the content and the themes of the way people are putting out information is it's a lot of, you know, it's quick hitting content, but then it's also sort of offering like this quick hitting solution, you know, just stuff like do this exercise to get faster or
spot more like vertical.
Go. Yeah. Like three drills to improve your first step, mm-hmm. you know, and it sort of gives this impression that like, oh, if you just do these things, then you'll just like be a better athlete. And it's just almost never that easy, right? Like most one drill or one exercise, generally speaking, you start doing, it's not actually going to make you a measurably better athlete. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, at least not in any type of short term. Now, yeah, it's a lot more challenging than that most of the time. We have these windows of opportunity where people can make fast improvements in short periods. And, you know, we got Jump Science testimonials for that, or any jump training program will have some examples of, you know, you have a talented teenage male who has a good athletic background, has already like jumped and sort of learned coordination, and they're consistent in their execution. And in that context, you give that person strength training, their vert's probably going to take off. And those first few months are going to be, you know, a fantasy, right? They're going to gain 6 inches on their vert and it's going to be like, wow.
Yeah.
This athlete thinks all I got to do is keep lifting and I'm going to have a 70 inch vertical. You know, that was me at 14. I thought I was going to, oh, I got 12 inches in a year. I'll just
every
get
year.
Another 24 inches the next 2 years. I'm going to be the highest jumper on the planet at 16. And then even also, you know, the coach who implements that program with them, like, man, I am good at this.
Yep.
You know, like,
yep.
Man, I told that kid to squat. I am a genius.
I cracked the code.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. I mean, hell, it's not that hard. Just squat the boy.
Uh-huh. And so the reality is that is those scenarios do exist.
Yeah.
You know, you also have situation where, okay, you have a young athlete, again, maybe some talent, maybe good athletic background, haven't really done linear sprinting before. Start having them do linear sprinting mm-hmm. a couple times a week. And yeah, they'll probably get faster in the short term. And then you're like, oh, genius.
Right.
I told them to sprint. This is how you get faster. Okay, well, keep sprinting short sprints twice per week for the next 6 months. See how much they keep getting faster,
mm-hmm.
right? People hit growth spurts and body changes a lot and they get more athletic as a byproduct of that. Sometimes regardless of what they're doing, right? I've had kids who they're running every day. They're lifting more than once per day.
Yeah.
You know, playing basketball in their spare time. Mm-hmm. And then like their 40 is still improving somehow.
Puberty,
and it's like, okay, well you just had, you know, you got lightning in a bottle right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have all these scenarios where it can be easy. It can be fast. All the other times outside of that, it's difficult.
Yeah.
And this includes even sometimes the beginners.
Yeah.
Sometimes the low-level athletes. It's not always easy. And there's this sort of this assumption, especially going through like collegiate strength and conditioning, you know, they say, oh yeah, low-level athletes, just get them stronger. They're going to get more athletic. And I think that, I'm not saying that doesn't exist, that theme, but it's way less obvious than people think it is in the way they sort of preach that it's going to be. So yeah, it's, you know, my experience is one, even with young kids, they need the background of doing the activity and a background of just being athletes in general,
right?
Developing some level of basic coordination, mm-hmm. Et cetera, for strength training to even transfer for them.
Right. Like, what are you going to do with the strength if you can't organize it or you have no ability to perform the task?
Exactly. So like coming out of strength and conditioning college classes and sort of learning, it was like, oh, I'm training a 12-year-old. Okay. This is easy.
Yeah.
Squats, lunges, boom, vert's going to go up.
Yep.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Not if he's not coordinated.
Yeah.
Not if he mostly has played video games.
His whole life, right?
You know, it's like there's actually a lot that has to be in place before strength can transfer. So I'm not against youth strength training, but I think you should actually be a lot more focused on getting them to sprint and jump.
Yeah.
And get them exposure to a variety of activities, movement solutions, you know, reactive agility, that type of thing. AKA playing sports, you know, like that covers a lot of it. If they do that, not all kids do, you know, growing up as a kid who played sports, you sort of miss how many things you develop without ever thinking about it.
Sure.
So, this is, you know, turning into a run on answer, but like, even with young kids, it's not as easy as people want it to be. Mm-hmm. They think it's just going to be, oh, just do this thing, just get them stronger. It's going to work. Not necessarily. So even in that context, then especially, you know, you're going to catch the puberty easy years.
Right.
Probably.
Makes everybody look smart.
Even in that context, I would say they have to do jumping.
Yeah.
They have to do sprinting, like if they want to improve those things. So you can easily have somebody who, you know, maybe they get more athletic sort of within their sport and they get stronger in the weight room. Their vert doesn't go up. Because they haven't jumped very much. Mm-hmm. Like you need that specific jumping background. Speed training. Okay, they got stronger in the weight room. They, you know, maybe move better in their sport. Doesn't necessarily mean their 10-yard is faster. Like they need that specific sprint background to get that, you know, that measurable change in athleticism. And so, yeah, even in the teenage years, it's not as easy to get like just universal development as people want to believe.
Yeah.
And then certainly once people are full grown,
then it gets
tough to really move the needle. You still have the, you know, 18 to 22 year old who's never strength trained,
right?
Has the good athletic background. Okay. Give them strength training that, you know, they're probably going to respond well.
Right.
It's going to be pretty fast progress in the short term. Long term, still probably not.
Yeah, like the guy who has never dunked a basketball or has never tried jump training, who's like, you know, late 20s, early 30s, who DMs you and says, how long will it take me to dunk?
Yes.
And it's like, never.
Yeah, you know, go back in time.
Yeah.
Start jumping at least by age 12, you know, something. Give me a few years of jump practice.
Yeah.
In the early years. Then you can make some real gains. And this is one of the challenges of, you know, the online situation is people see these testimonials.
Yes.
From the talented teenage kid.
Yeah.
And then they do a jump program at age 27.
Yeah.
While they work their desk job. Mm-hmm. And they gain 2 inches in 4 months and they're disappointed. They think, oh, what's wrong? You know, why am I not making progress? Well, you missed a whole bunch of development in your early years that, you know, like you didn't have the same background and the same talent as that kid. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to get the same type of results. And so I said this once upon a time, I actually made a post. I was like, you can't replace a childhood of jumping with a 2-month jump program.
Right.
There just isn't a replacement for it. So yeah, even if that 27-year-old, that 32-year-old is a low level athlete, just because they're a beginner doesn't mean it's going to be easy to make improvement.
Right.
If they don't have that specific background of, you know, jumping, sprinting, throwing, whatever it is they're trying to improve, mm-hmm. strength training and even general athletic development, you know, let's say plyometrics and stuff, it may not really transfer to much, you know? So yeah, just you have the contrast of social media and sort of these quick hit solutions and it's good marketing. Like you can do, you know, within 6 weeks, you can be a different athlete, whatever. And then you have the reality of athletic development over time.
You know, I'd be interested because, you know, Dan, you and I work in private sector. So we get exposure on a regular basis to some of these like ends of the spectrum. I think more than like coaches who are in like a high school setting or a collegiate setting or a pro setting where you're getting guys who or gals that are almost certainly, they have exposure to this athletic background, athletic base, lots of movement variety. They've been running, jumping, sprinting in various ways for a long talent. So, but to that point, Zach, I would be interested to know like your take on what he's saying there and then how you see that showing up in collegiate setting where you're getting girls that are really skilled and, you know, have an athletic background and how that shows up in like in your world.
Yeah, I think so. This is funny. We did combine testing for the first time this year, like WNBA combine, you know, 3/4 court sprint, vertical approach, vertical lane, whatever. And the one drill that nobody could figure out was approach vertical.
Yeah.
And I was like, how do they not know how to run and jump? And then I thought back to my childhood, like, the second you could dunk on an 8-foot goal, like that's all you wanted to do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You go out in your driveway every night, dunk, 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 try to make it go higher, dunk, dunk, dunk. Because eventually you wanted to dunk on 10 feet. But in the women's game, like it's not common for women to dunk at 10. So why, or at 10 feet? So why would I try and practice if that's not something that I see all the
time? Sure.
Yes. The culture's not there in the women's game. Yep.
They've never worked out. I was like, wow, this is kind of eye opening. And then I look back at our own training and we don't do much like approach jumps or anything like that. So we kind of, we had to, you know, rewind and, you know, teach them how to sequence and jump and basically be more athletic to run and jump.
Yes.
Cause they do it all the time in the game, but they don't think about it.
Right.
And cause we were explaining them like, hey, whether you're a 1-foot jumper or 2-foot jumper, like pick whatever you're comfortable with. And they had no idea what I was talking about.
Yep. Yep.
And I was like, okay, this makes sense. Like you're probably developed better fundamentally wise. Cause you weren't spending half your nights trying to dunk.
Right. But you're developed less athletically.
Exactly.
Yep.
So that's why I think to your point of like the better rounded athlete you are, you know, coordinated and be able to run, jump, throw and everything. It's going to translate a lot better than a lot of these barbell movements where it's like stand up, sit down, press away, come back.
Yeah.
So more goes into your vertical jump than obviously just force application into the,
right,
the ground.
Right. And you can't assume that people have that in place.
Correct.
And if they don't have it in place, all the other training, even if they get better at it, may not change that thing very much.
No. Right.
You know, you could get their squats up 30 pounds and their approach vert might be the same.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's the reality. It's difficult. And so, yeah, it's the specifics of jump practice. And then it'd also be sort of that, you know, dynamic, reactive, high speed ability, which is another thing that basketball players don't necessarily develop just by playing their sport. You know, that was something that I learned when I started training, not just male, somewhat talented basketball players, but started getting them at younger age. And I was like, wow, this dude really cannot bounce off the ground at all. Like he's terrible at plyometrics, even though he plays basketball every day.
Yeah.
And that was weird to me. But yeah, it's like you start getting exposure to people with different backgrounds, less exposure to, you know, to plyometric training and sprinting and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, the sport of basketball itself does not develop reactive abilities very well at all.
Well, it's crazy because there's like two different players that we'll get, like a uber athletic kid that can do everything, and then someone who is like a skill specific basketball player.
Yes.
So like I think football, and a lot of times if you're just faster than everybody and bigger and stronger, like there's a position out there where you can play.
Yeah, you'll figure the rest out.
Yeah, you'll see plenty of basketball players, not plenty, but they can play college basketball and be like Tony Gonzalez, go to the NFL, played tight end. But you don't usually see college football players, I don't think there ever has been, go to the NBA.
Right.
Such the skill component. So it's interesting to see these athletes that make it, you know, to the 1% playing Power Five basketball. Like, are they a skill type player? Are they just a freak athlete? Or are they both? And then they're
some kind of combination.
Yeah, that's what you want.
Yeah.
What are some like, I know coaches like drills and everything. What's some like low hanging fruit that you would go back to your 13-year-old self and kind of install? And then, you know, once you mastered those, like a couple of years later, what you would introduce and things like that?
Yeah. What would you change and do differently?
Oh, so my 13-year-old program was squats and calf raises 5 days a week.
I like that.
So you should not like that.
Belligerent.
So I don't know where I got that discipline from. I did sets of 25 squats.
Whoa.
And I did sets of 100 calf raises. Okay, so first of all, let's do that twice per week with much more reasonable numbers.
Yeah.
And then when you say low hanging fruit, first thing I thought of was sprinting.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was, you know, obsessed with dunking and I was better off 2 feet. So I mostly practiced 2 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did that in squat and that was like the thing. And so I jumped a lot higher. I did not get faster. I actually got slower relative to my peers. I wasn't measuring my speed. So I don't know what the end effect was of like growing 4 inches and jumping 10 inches higher. Mm-hmm. But yeah, relative to my peers, like my classmates that played soccer, I got way slower because I was among the fastest kids in my class, I remember. And then eighth grade, I was way behind them.
Yep.
And so if I could go back track and field at age 6.
Yeah, dude.
Track and running and jumping off one leg. So yeah, like sprinting and long jump and high jump. Yeah. And, you know, the day I have kids for sure. We're pushing them that way. Can't force it too much, but man, that's, we're definitely trying to get that exposure. And then, or, you know, friggin' parkour, you know, whatever, yes. Young kids. So yeah, big thing would be sprinting and running and jumping off one leg would be the thing I would tell my 13-year-old self, like, do this, start timing sprints, start running and sprinting more and do way less squatting and calf raising. Yeah, for sure. And to this day, I'm still trying to correct that error. Yeah.
So what would you say to, like, you know, the coach or the dad or whatever, that their 12 to 13 year old son or daughter, wants to, you know, increase their vertical sprint, but they really want them, they're pushing the weights first. What do you think the best way is to complement that, to actually turn them into better athletes?
Yeah. So I would try to tell them, okay, you can do weights. You don't have to give that up. But you got all kinds of time to get stronger, you know, through age 25 or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's usually not the limiting factor. Like, oh, we just can't get this person stronger, this teenager stronger.
Yeah.
And I would say speed, reactive ability, explosiveness, these are things that are a lot harder to develop later. You're way better off developing this early in life and prioritizing that and adding strength as a complement to that later. Get all the specific explosive bouncy stuff in childhood. Develop that as much as you can because it's easy. Kids are resilient. They can just run and run and run and jump and jump and jump. Do all that first. That's the better long-term formula. When it comes to weights, you can do some, but even then I would say, you know, let's do trap bar deadlift. Mm-hmm. Let's do loaded carries. Let's do lunge jumps, you know, like explosive type strength training. Things that are not going to interfere at all. And, you know, would squatting measurably interfere with speed in a 10 or 11 year old kid? Probably not, as long as it's reasonable. But if you do sets of 25 every day, I bet it could. Compared to where they could go without that, right?
Uh-huh.
So yeah, that would be my speech. Like, you don't have to give this up, but let's just keep it in the appropriate place.
So you'd say you'd be more on the velocity end of things, rather than like the low force.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The low speed, high muscular force. I'd be like, let's bounce and sprint and move fast. It's easy to gain strength from age, you know, 15 to 25. Like, yeah. We don't have to rush to do that.
Yeah.
That would be my approach.
So I actually, you know, for those who don't know, Dan and I, we're friends. Mm-hmm. And we live in the same city, and I see, and I follow him on socials. So I know, like, what you're saying isn't just like, you know, you walk the walk when it comes to this stuff. And I see you implement it with, you train a lot of high school athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And I see you implement this stuff. Can you give some like practical examples of like what a training session might look like? Maybe use one of the track girls, you know?
Sure.
How do you prioritize jumping off one leg, sprinting? How do you set those exercises up? You know, are you timing, competing? Give me the rundown.
Yeah, so I mean, going into a session, I'm always asking the kids what they've been doing lately and stuff. And then, you know, once you get sort of familiar with everything that's they got going on, you sort of have an idea of like, these are the gaps I'm trying to fill in their training. And, you know, usually sprinting and plyometrics are at the top of that priority list for me. They're not generally getting exposure to a lot of that outside of working with me. You know, the sport may have conditioning in it, may have some running in it, but like it's usually not high quality sprinting, and then it's not usually not high quality plyometrics. So usually, you know, I'm trying to get plyos in the warm up, then I'm trying to sprint, then I'm trying to do more plyos, and then also some type of like big jumping that's not quick. And the way that I explain that to people is like jumping for height or distance is a good way to train your leg power, even if it's not a part of your sport. So like soccer girl, we're jumping.
Yeah.
You know, receiver in football, we're jumping. Even though it's a, you know, small part of the sport, you know, right. Jumping up for a ball or something. We're jumping off one, we're jumping off two. Is it sport specific? No, I don't care. We're trying to develop athleticism.
Right.
Okay. So a lot of times I'm trying to get like all those things into a session.
Yeah.
And then if they still have a need for more strength training, because a lot of them are doing strength training other places.
Right. They're already doing it at the school. Then, they have a strength staff, especially football kids.
Yes, yes. Yep. Then, you know, we might do that. And so sometimes it's like they don't have that, and then I have to kind of save more time for it. Or some people, I just like give them extra time because I just want them to succeed. And then other times it's filling in gaps. Like, oh, okay, so you squatted, and then you front squatted, and then later in the week you squatted again. Okay.
Should we do more squats?
So
we're going to front squat.
Yeah, right. So, okay, let's box and hack and front squat today.
Right.
No, so then it's like, okay, well, let's touch a little hamstrings, a little groin maybe. Let's do something on one leg, you know, sort of fill in the gaps. And so, yeah, it tends to look like sort of a full spectrum of training.
Yeah.
Then I do have, you know, I have like football guys where it, like I don't touch strength.
Yep.
Or maybe like, okay, the one thing they're not doing is like knee flexion strength training. And so for sprinting, I want to do that for the hamstrings. Otherwise, everything is sprinting, plows, jumping. With the track athletes, that varies. Sometimes they have like a track club they're running with or something. And then it's like, okay, you don't need more sprinting.
Right.
Do a little bit of complementary plyos, and then strength training is actually the thing they need.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, on that topic, I do have this struggle where if you have a track person who's not running with a club, and maybe their school's not really providing it, providing enough running, doing short sprints with me once or twice per week isn't actually enough sprinting for them to change their max velocity. And that can work out if it's, okay, well, maybe we don't really develop max velocity in the off season. You wait till you get to your track season and then you'll develop it. That can work out. So like I have a kid right now who decided to, so he's a sprinter, but he decided to play volleyball in the fall and basketball in the winter. So I just told him, I was like, okay, so you're not going to be getting like a bunch of speed PRs while you do that.
Right.
We're going to get you stronger. We're going to work on your start. Because he's not a good starter naturally. And you're going to hit your season with more strength, a better start, and more potential. But you're not going to like PR your 100 meter.
You're not going to show up
this fall.
Right.
You know, or like this winter. Like we're not going to go over to the track and you're just like measurably faster in the 200 than you used to be. Because you're going to have to get your track legs back. You know, with the track athlete, there is sometimes a little bit of a struggle there where me doing one-on-one training sessions and them, well, obviously, it's, you know, it's more expensive. They don't come see me 4 or 5 days a week. And that one session I have, I'm not going to take them out to the track and just like blow a whistle and make them run 6 150s.
Yeah.
You know?
What do you think the like minimum effective dose for sprinting per week, do you think?
It's a heck of a topic. So this is right in line with the how hard is athletic development, really? Yeah, what I was talking about with the track athletes, like they actually need that running volume to develop max velocity. we talked about before, the windows of opportunity where you can get fast development. Okay, so you do have windows of opportunity where the minimum effective dose of sprinting might be low. Okay, somebody who's new to sprinting, for example, like new to linear sprinting, you know, do it weekly, probably going to change within a month or two, right? Probably going to see some progress. Somebody who's growing, right? If their body's getting longer, if they can just sort of maintain their force production capabilities relative to the size of their body, then they'll get faster. They'll develop that max velocity. If you, you know, sometimes there's like fatigue and rest. And so you finish a season and then you start taking way more off days and just sprinting once or twice a week. And then you get faster during that time. It's like, oh, sprinting once or twice per week is magical. Well, no, it's the resting after all the fatigue is what's magical.
The super cup.
So yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'll get these windows and they're usually fairly short term of sprinting once per week is all you need to do. And then maybe there's other windows where sprinting twice per week is enough, right? And it's, we're talking, you know, 40 meters times four reps or something is like a workout. You know, like it doesn't take a whole lot. Another one would be like, you got an adolescent kid who's new to strength training. They start getting way stronger and they kind of get faster as that happens. And during that time, they don't have to sprint a lot. So we have these windows, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not the norm. Usually takes a lot more work to change your body for speed. And this is something I just posted about a couple of days ago. One of my young track athletes, I've been training her for, I guess, 3+ years, coming up on 3.5. And she's gotten a good amount of development from short, fast sprints, plyometrics, lifting, and then, you know, she had like played basketball in eighth grade and then did a short middle school track season. Then freshman year actually played basketball and so was in the basketball class for the entire year, but then did a short track season in the spring. And so got a little bit of the running volume in the spring. She's gotten some development during that time, but I would say she went probably a solid, you know, close to a year without really any max velocity changes, in spite of getting stronger, in spite of doing short, fast sprints, in spite of plyometrics. Well, this past fall, she got with a running club, which I was happy about because I had said her freshman year, I said, you need more running. And then she was in the track period, or sorry, her sophomore year. I said, you need more running. She was in the track class at school and they just like didn't really run very much.
Who signs up for track class?
Animal. I was way too lazy in high school. You were, I didn't run track just because I was like, right. This shit's hard.
Right. Well, so in this case, it wasn't hard. They were committed. They did med ball throws every week.
Okay.
They did plyometrics every week. They did like wickets every week.
But they didn't get fast.
They didn't like run fast for like a track distance.
Interesting.
They had like one day of like slow 150s or slow 200s.
Yeah.
And that was like the only volume running. And then, yeah, their fast sprints is usually like 30-yard acceleration or something. That was it. And until track season, then they get outdoor practice and then obviously meets. Meets are tremendous speed training, or running a fast 200 or a fast 100. But she, you know, I hadn't really seen her max velocity change for a while. She got with this running club. She's running, yes, some short sprints, some hill sprints, even some short hill sprints. Then a day of like fast 60s or 80s, which is great. And she had a day of paced 200s, fairly short rest and a bunch of reps. That turned into a day of broken 400s, which is run a 300, stop for like 10 seconds, and then run a 100.
Oof.
Okay, and multiple reps of that in a practice. And then that eventually turned into running fast 200s with longer rest. And then, so that was one day in the week. And then later in the week, it was paced 300s by herself for like 3 reps minimum, sometimes like 5. Okay, so she was doing a lot of running that was not all out effort.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sub maximal effort, paced. Some of it was conditioning, which is difficult.
What's her
but
event?
She's a jumper and then likes the 200.
Okay.
But then, so she went into an indoor meet, and this is like recently, after the, you know, doing this for the entire fall and like through the holiday season and stuff, then like gets a little bit more rest, goes into an indoor meet. She runs a 7:88 in the 60, which is almost a half a second faster than I'd seen her run a 60 in practice with, but with different timing. So the video timing that I do is going to be based on her moving, and track timing starts even sooner than that. Mm-hmm. So generally you're going to expect about the track timing to be about 2/10 slower than what you would do on your own, than what you would do in video timing. She was like over 4/10 faster than her 60 meter PR.
Pretty good.
Okay. So huge, huge change. And then she goes, does 200 and runs 25:71, which is over a half second faster than her outdoor 200 PR from last track season. So she got better development from a bunch of running volume to go with the short, fast sprints than she ever did from short, fast sprints a couple times a week.
So let me ask you this. Is there like, because I work with a lot of football guys.
Yeah.
I get guys ready for the combine. NFL offseason, I've got guys 5 to 8 weeks. And we don't do a ton of long distance run volume.
Mm-hmm.
Guys do get faster with mostly like an acceleration focused day, a quote unquote max velocity focused day. We're talking anywhere between 30 and 60 yards max.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And I say that because I think the kind of athlete that they are is like that. Obviously, these are elite athletes,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting ready for a pro day or a combine,
pretty good.
Or yeah, you're pretty good. You have all the raw ability,
mm-hmm,
to be able to take like this horsepower and punch it in. And it's like, I think in that particular category, I can do those things and feel pretty good about it because everybody gets, yeah, faster. And like, you know, most, right, I'll say most guys get faster.
Mm-hmm.
Most guys adapt. It's never 100%. But what demographics do you feel like need that the most? Like where can that be the most beneficial longer distance? Because the thing is like you and I chatted about this off pod, but like longer distances, sub max running, mm-hmm, in performance, the general sense that I get is it's kind of like it's outdated, it's old, it's not specific enough, you know, repeat sprint ability, that's it. And like, you know, the days of having longer conditioning days where you're running, mm-hmm, these longer distances is more frowned upon.
Yes, largely in the like the performance world.
Yes.
Yep.
So but what I'm hearing from you is like, there's a time and place for that,
oh, yeah,
where it can be highly beneficial. So obviously she was a good example. If you had to give like some qualities or, you know, the kind of athlete that needs that's really beneficial for, mm-hmm, what would that be?
So yeah, a lot of things to talk about there. So first of all, like your football guys, you know, that context, like coming off of a football season.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Like, okay, let's less football practice, couple sprint days per week. Makes sense. That's going to produce some changes in that short term. Mm-hmm. Now, are they faster than they've ever been, or are they faster than they were at the end of football season?
It's the second one,
right?
Because everyone gets slower as the season goes on.
Exactly.
So everybody does.
So that's one thing. It's like they're sort of returning to form.
Yes.
Right? Now, for them, that very well may be meeting their needs, right? Like, mm-hmm, if you're in the NFL already, or let's say you prepared for the combine, yeah, or a pro day or a pre-draft workout, and you did what you need to do, and now you have your opportunity. Is improving your max velocity going to make a difference in your career going forward?
Mm.
Probably not. You know, this. Most cases, that's probably not the thing that's going to like make them more successful in the NFL.
Right.
There might be some cases where it is, though.
Yeah.
It's probably more about, yeah, let's get these guys, make sure they're back to what they're capable of, and yes, not let them just keep drifting away.
Well, I think that's why a lot of, just side note here, and this will be a little, yeah, controversial. I think a lot of guys' careers end sooner than they have,
yeah,
to. Because max velocity isn't a priority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talk about so-and-so lost a step. And I see it firsthand. It's because it's all those things that got them to where they're at, they're no longer doing. And instead of prioritizing max velocity training, they're getting it in their routes or their quote unquote field work, or they're only hitting acceleration.
Or they're just staying in shape.
Just, yeah, just staying fit. I just got to get ready. I just want to stay healthy. And like, which of course makes sense. Of course you want to stay healthy because, you know, the best ability is availability, and that's not wrong. But also, what I see in my niche and in my space is a lot of people leaning really hard into that and not taking an honest look at the content of what they're doing over the course of any period of training and getting real about, because here's the thing, like, you're a great athlete now, you know, running 20s and 40s and that being the, you know, not actually doing any max velocity focus, that's not going to extend your career. So anyway, little rant.
Wouldn't like keeping health, I think people like, when the, you get out like side of 25, they're like, I don't need to sprint anymore. So I'm going to get hurt sprinting. But like when your sport is, because I mean, we go play pickup basketball, and if you've been sprinting and running around, like, you're taking
takes a toll.
Bomb.
That's right. But yeah, you might lose an Achilles.
Yeah, right?
Start bounding, man.
But, well, I think case in point, like if you want to stay healthy and available to play for a long career, like sprinting regularly, doing plyos regularly with the right volume and dose. Like,
big case to be made for that.
Keep you safer than not running hard.
Yes, because you're continuing to get exposure to those things. Correct. So then when you do suddenly have to sprint in a game, or you have like weird steps and all this stuff, it's like, well, yeah, my tendons have been through some stuff already, though. They're used to stuff. So yeah, I think that's a great point. And I totally agree. I've thought about that myself. I was like, man, I feel like a lot of dudes 5 years in the NFL are slower than they used to be.
They are.
And in some cases, that makes them less effective as a football player.
Totally.
If you're a running back and you lost a step, world of difference.
Yeah. And especially if that's your skill set.
Yes.
Like if that's the thing.
You're a speed guy. That,
yeah. Yeah. This, like, yeah. If you're the change of pace back and you lost your pace, bro, you are fucked.
Good luck.
Not good.
So I think that's a huge thing. And yeah, you got to imagine guys become millionaires.
Yep.
Get access to luxury. You know, it's so easy to just like, just keep showing up to practice and games and like just try to keep playing the game. It's like,
yep.
When's the last time you measured any aspect of your athleticism to see if you're still there? You know, I think that's a huge, there's a huge need for that. And I've had so many times I've been on like watching football and be like, man, I'd love to train that guy. You know, like goodness, I just 3 months in the off season, I bet if he just started measuring things and then like training in a way to make them better or just to get them back to where they once were, he'd hit the next season feeling so better. It is so much better and being more effective on the field. And people would see it and it would just be like, yes, this is how you're supposed to sustain your career. But with the NFL guys, yeah, the short sprints in the offseason very well may meet their needs, right? Or maybe not a whole lot of running volume. I think obviously it's different for track athletes where it's like max velocity is the thing they need.
Have to have it.
Yeah.
It's not an option.
That's what the sport's about.
Yeah.
And so that's where the, you know, I think that we talk about, go back to the minimum effective dose. I think it's way higher than people think. They definitely way higher than they want it to be.
Yeah.
They want it to be flying 10s twice per week.
Right.
And it's just not how you get faster over time.
You know, something that comes to mind is like the Tony Holler approach, the feed the cat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where, you know, the idea being like truly, truly minimum effective dose, doing as little possible. And that's, that speed, that's like real athletic training for max velocity.
Yes.
And, you know, I, in my mind, and like I've heard so much of what he's talked about, and like there are so many elements of it that I really love.
Yeah, same.
I really love. But then there are also things that I think about where it's like, well, okay, if I'm getting an athlete who doesn't have a lifetime of sprinting and running, and I'm only exposing them to, you know, 200 meters worth of sprint volume twice a week. How much better are they going to continue to get over any considerable period of time? I don't know.
Probably not very much. Probably not very much. If they were doing nothing and then they go to doing that, they're going to change.
It's a stimulus.
Yeah. It's new and they'll adapt a little bit to it. But yeah, over time, probably not very much. Yeah. Big fan of Tony Holler.
Yeah.
Honestly, like make track practice fun.
Yes.
Keep them sprinting fast.
Yeah. Cause that's why I bounced. That's why I quit track.
Yeah.
I said, dude, fuck this.
Right.
I'm running a lot. Yeah. You know, and at the time I didn't see, like we're talking about now, it's easy to look back in hindsight and say, God, I wish I would have stuck with track because I'm just not fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I, for the record, I still wouldn't have been fast enough, but I would have been I would have been faster for sure.
Yes.
You know? So yeah, anyway, I don't mean to cut you off, but you're right. He's made it fun and exciting and competitive.
And measuring things and put it on the board and it's competitive.
So like awesome.
I love all that. And I even love the critique of over-conditioning in track 100%. And field, right? You can definitely overdo it too much and never run fast, and that's not good either. But I think people from the outside looking in just see him talk about that and they miss the fact that but also a lot of my guys played football and basketball.
Yeah.
So they actually ran a bunch in the fall.
Yeah.
And we do 15 to 20 meets a year, which means they're running 100, 200, 200 in a day competitively. And that's sprint volume. And that's not a flying 10.
Right.
So I think there's more pieces in place than people realize.
The meat is the training.
Yes.
As well.
And that fits. Okay. You have a short track season. He's in Illinois. He's got, you know, winter to deal with.
Yeah.
And so you have this small window of opportunity for track season. It's like, okay, so go out there, compete a lot, try to stay fresh for your meets and get as much as you can out of that. Okay, good. That does not mean that other person in other sport who's never sprinted before should only do flying 10s.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like we can't misapply only half of what's going on with this high school track team and just start plugging into all these other situations. So yeah, track athletes need more to develop max velocity. Other athletes also need more volume.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases to really change themselves. Now it's tough because you got to have opportunity for that. You got to have capacity for that in their big picture. And so no, I'm not like, oh yeah, basketball player in season, let's go do repeat twos.
Right.
You know,
there's time and place.
Yeah.
As well.
And this is why I'm big on off seasons, you know?
Yeah.
Especially let's say, basketball player, football player, soccer player, who's not a fast one, not a fast player and needs to get faster, have an off season, train like a sprinter.
Yep.
And include some level of volume in that. And that will move your needle for speed and reactivity, and you'll see it show up in your single leg jumps.
Yep.
You'll see it show up in quickness. It'll change you athletically, but you have to have that season to do it. If you have practice 4 days per week with your AAU team and then you play 8 games and a tournament on the weekend, then it's just overkill.
Yeah.
If you try to train like a sprinter on top of that.
Yep.
You need the opportunity to do it. But I do think using that approach would be great for athletes in other sports.
So to be
like
clear,
getting that volume. So having a season of doing it, that's the other thing. I'm not saying do it all year long.
Yes.
Have a season of getting the volume and it's going to change your body and you're going to reap the rewards following that. Even when you're not sprinting at all, but like even when you're sprinting less, you're going to continue to reap the benefits of that sprinting more. And that also exists within track where it's like, okay, run more for a while, then competitive season, dial it back. Sprint fast, do your meets, and stay fresh. So I'm not just saying like always run a lot all year long. It's, you know, it's use it as a tool for a while to change your body and then back down from it. The one other thing that when you're talking about like who can benefit from this.
Yes.
I think there is something to be said for reactive athletes, for tendon driven, as some people would say, or fascial driven.
Right.
There are people that sort of have that talent and they need this to develop that talent.
Hmm.
And they're the ones that are going to benefit the most because they're like made for it.
Right.
And this is where even within track, you get distinctions between that natural 200, 400 person and that natural 60 meter person.
Yeah.
Right. And so that 200, 400 person, you know, they may have an off season of good strength training, good jumps. They improve their broad jump and vertical, all these things. But let's say they didn't sprint that much. They're going to hit their track training and they're going to be slow. But you give them that volume back for a month. Now it's like, oh, they're better than ever. You know, they did the level up of those other qualities in the off season. Then they get back to what like really makes them who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it translates into, you know, hitting a higher level, but they really need that volume. Whereas a 60 meter specialist, probably really fast twitch, maybe not quite as, you know, long stride, smooth flowing, reactive type athlete. They're not going to get as much benefit, and they're not going to be at their best when they're running a lot. They're going to be at their best when they're really fresh and not sprinting that much and tapping into their fast twitch talent. So even within track, I think you get that distinction. And then certainly within other sports, you know, you get the long stride, likes to run and jump off 1 foot basketball player. And that type of guy or girl will thrive off of more running. And then you got, you know, a heavy muscular one.
Yeah,
me too. Right. All three of us. Strength coaches. Wait, what?
It seems to be a theme,
right?
Yeah,
and so we can still benefit, but in the thick of the running more, we're probably not going to be at our best.
Yep,
it's going to be a thing we have to use to try to change our body, but then get back to
what makes us who we are.
So exactly.
Have you noticed like recovery differences between that 200 athlete and like that 60 meter athlete, like who needs more recovery, who needs less frequency, dose, that kind of stuff?
So the you know, less explosive but more like reactive, I guess would be, you know, sort of the term, more elastic naturally athlete, the running is easier for them. And so they do the volume and then they can run fast again the next day and they can run fast again. Like it's they take it a lot easier. Fast twitch people, it takes a toll, more of a toll, because, you know, fast twitch
is not muscularly driven.
Yeah, a little bit. And again, they're still really explosive and fast, but it's like they're achieving it, I think, in a different way. And this is something where it's sort of intuition based, you know. Because I'm not taking biopsies. What does a fascial driven athlete look like? Should we even use that term?
Right.
You know,
it's just an easy way. I think rabbit hole here. I think people kind of get bent out of shape. It's like, well, we shouldn't categorize athletes, and it's arbitrary. And it's, no shit, it's arbitrary. And it's made up. But if it helps you better serve, you know, and sort of categorize based off experience, how you might better meet someone's needs, then I think it has a viable and necessary place.
Yeah.
And like the name or term is irrelevant, but at least it's effectively more of a lens than just like a label, for example.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I mean, until we have measurements where you can say this person is a 7 and this person is a 2, it's like you have to just use descriptive phrases.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, they may not be perfect, but it's like you gotta say it somehow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the fast twitch fast person as opposed to the reactive fast person is gonna thrive on a little less volume and more recovery. And if they do a hard, you know, those multiple 200s in a workout type of thing, it definitely takes a bigger toll on them. Whereas those reactive athletes like thrive on that type of thing. So yeah, I think there's definitely differences there. Yeah. I'm thinking of athletes I've worked with in the past and I can like, you know, there's a pretty clear distinction between like different
long
ones.
Long and lean can recover quick.
Yes.
And looks like us can't.
Yes.
yeah. Right. Exactly.
But then even us, like we're not that fast twitch though. No,
it's true. Bad example. Like,
exactly.
Okay. So for the listeners, you know, one of the distinctions you can look at is like, how good a jumpers are these people?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's tricky is that fast reactive, let's say it's that 200, 400 meter runner in track, not always a great standing vert guy or girl, not always a big broad jumper. And you may be like puzzled by how can they sprint 10.5 meters per second? They're like not even that athletic. They have a unique ability to, once they get going, they can just bounce off the ground.
Stored energy.
Yes.
I have a case study.
Yep. Boom. Right. Here's
go. Here's an example. So, young kid, great athlete. He's played basketball his whole life. Star quarterback, elite 11, freshman. He's getting offers from a bunch of schools. I'm not going to name drop him, but he's a stud. His start, terrible.
Yes.
Horrible start. I mean, it's bad. And then his standing vert, Now, to give you some context, he's 6'3". His reach is 97. He has the same reach as me.
So over 8.
Okay. He's 15. Dang. Okay. His track events historically have been 200 and 400.
Makes perfect sense.
Vert, 26 inches.
Yep.
Running single leg jump, 34 and a half.
Boom. And it's not even a sport.
No.
Not even something he's like, well, basketball, I guess, right?
Yes. But he's a natural single leg jumper, natural 2 foot jumper. Atrocious. I mean, not a natural two. His 2 foot jump. He has a decent broad jump.
Okay.
But his counter movement vertical is relative to the other skills he can display apart from his start.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from his start, but like, you know, you think start, counter movement, jump. You know, like
there's a connection there.
Yes.
Yeah.
But his single leg jump. I mean. I knew it was going to be good because I was watching him in the warm-up. I said, do power skips for height. And immediately I looked at his mom and I'm thinking to myself, we got one.
Yeah. Yep.
We got one. That counter movement jump, we can get that up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this single leg jump, you can't teach that.
Uh-huh.
You can,
classic example of something that's hard to develop.
Yes.
Yep.
Single leg jumping.
Even
he's just good at
a young kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that makes perfect sense. Yeah, he's like fitting into one of those types, right?
Yes.
And yeah, it just goes back again to how hard it is to develop athleticism. So let's say that kid fell in love with football at a young age, and he's like really trying to get his 10-yard faster. It's going to be tough.
Yes.
Because he is not built for it.
He's not. His legs are long.
Yep. And even though he's, you know, a good athlete and works out hard, and is young and has all this potential, and it should be, you know, we think it's going to be easy athletic development. If he was like dead set on trying to be really fast in 10 and 20 yard, it'd be a tough process.
Yeah. Well, you know? I worked with him, so he had to get ready. He had to go to a combine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so we started working together more frequently, and I had him run outside, and like the back half of his 40 looked good.
Yeah.
It just looked good. I didn't even time it. I didn't want to get in his head. I was like, okay. That looked good.
What you got?
But the glaring obvious. I was like, holy shit! 0 to 10 yards. This is lineman slow, and it looked unathletic. And so that's all we worked on was his start.
Yep.
He was happy with the 40 time he went away with, but all I could think about was like, he was like, oh, you know, I'm gonna be running. I was like, are you running track this year? He's like, yes. I was like, you don't need to do long running events. Like, do it, but also as much as possible. Work on a start and like a fast start.
Yes.
Like if you can do 60 meter runs, 100 meter, you know, hurdles, anything where you're coming out of blocks, do that. Because I can't think of another way apart from him spending time with me working on starts that are going to actually help his ability to start.
So, you know, it's good that you said, practice starts and like try to fill in that gap a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. At the same time, the 200, 400 stuff is going to develop his talent.
True.
And it goes back to what I was saying.
It's
like
part of what's gotten him
those type of athletes thrive on that type of stuff.
Right.
So like, let's say he didn't do that, didn't do track and maybe
only
just
focused on his start,
just did starts and just played basketball. You very well might find that his running one leg vert suffers, you know, now, not necessarily, because maybe in basketball, he runs and jumps off one leg a lot.
He does. That's all.
So that, you know, the way that people play the game has an influence as well. Some people get more training from a sport because of the way they play it. So, there's a lot of factors to consider there. But yeah, in his case, again, for a season every year, track's going to be good for him. And even running a lot is going to be good for him because it is developing his talent. So... yeah, work on the starts, but like, don't neglect the thing.
The moneymaker.
Like, you're going to be yourself.
Right.
You know, you're not going to be NFL running back start.
Yep.
Right. And if you decide that that's what you need to do, you're going to have a frustrating time trying to become that athlete.
Right.
As who you are. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. So in a scenario like that precise scenario, here's what I'm thinking. Because what I'm asking him is, how much can you squat? Because in my mind, and by the way, long levered kid, I'm thinking we're probably going to have a more hingy squat. Wrong.
Dude, I could have told you that.
Beautiful.
Ooh, that's another soapbox I can get on.
Okay, well, I want to hear the soapbox, but let me finish because I think this is probably going to give you some more ammunition. So I'm thinking to myself, all right, so he just looks weak coming out of this start. I'm saying to myself, if I just can get his squat up, you know, maybe I'm going to see some significant improvement in his ability to express some output in 0 to 10 yards.
Yes.
Daniel Bach.
Not as easy as you want it to be, bro. Okay. So first of all, reactive athletes, historically, a lot of times I've heard, oh, they're hip dominant.
Yeah.
And it's essentially because they're good at things where they don't bend their knee very much, right?
Single jumping.
Max velocity, running and jumping off one leg. Oh, you don't bend your knee very much. You don't need quad strength. Wrong. Okay. Complete exact opposite is what I've observed. So the athletes that I've had who are better at max velocity, better at single leg jumping than they are at other things. Okay. So like this kid you're talking about, track athletes that I've worked with. And so I want to be clear. It's not like every fast person, but it's people who are specifically better at max velocity than they are at other things.
Okay.
Knee dominant. Quick off the ground, reactive. You have to be strong at the ankle and knee. Never seen a hip dominant, like bent over squatter have like super good RSI and be better at max velocity.
Interesting.
Quick off the ground, you got to be strong at the ankle and knee. And so it's actually the opposite of what people say. And I still haven't found anybody who defies that. I'm stacking up case studies of people who fit that description. Case in point, one that I've talked about in the past on some podcasts, collegiate sprinter I worked with, who he's another one of these reactive guys. Not a great starter. 8 foot broad jump, you know.
Yep.
Like I would say, not very good for a college track athlete.
Yeah, my kid jumped 8'6".
Okay, yeah, but then he's 6'3".
Yes.
So that's part of that.
Yes.
Yeah. So right around 8 foot broad jump. A little bit better standing vert, 27, because he was knee dominant. It's easier to go vertical.
Yeah.
Okay. But like not an explosive athlete in terms of his start and his jumps.
Right.
Once he got going, he could just effortlessly bounce off the ground. Like small arm swing, calm face, boom, 10 meters per second. He's just chilling. You know, it's like, this is in the off season. It's like in July. Right. And he's been squatting and stuff. Like it's not like he's peaked out and 10 meters per second. He had the most upright squat I've seen of anybody I've trained.
Wow.
And he, you know, could like drop and bounce out of a pistol squat. He had trouble with the balance aspect of it, but like it was not a strength problem.
You could argue that that's the skill though, right?
Like, right. Yeah. Well, and the ankle mobility.
Do them for three weeks.
He had tight ankles, which is another thing we could talk about. But so these talented reactive athletes are strong at the knee.
Yeah.
So that what you just said about the, you know, your guy, the 200, 400 guy has got a bad start. I would expect him, just based on the description,
yes,
I'd expect him to have a good squat.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
Like a nice upright squat.
Thing of beauty. And like, you know, usually what I'll do is I'll go front squat first. Just I want to see if they can get in that position. And that gives me some implications.
And you got
like,
the heels elevated, right?
Here's the thing. I said, because I like to see what it looks like prior to that.
Okay.
I want to see a true, let's just squat, dude. Mm-hmm. You know, and if it's ugly, I don't spend time. I'm like, you know, your squat looks like shit.
Right.
We really need to elevate your heel. You know what I mean?
Man.
Now, if it is something I'm like, okay, this kid has really adapted a heel driven, more hip, quote unquote, dominant squat, and he needs to bend, he needs to lean into a more knee dominant squat, and that's going to help him.
Yeah.
Just because he doesn't have that, he doesn't have access to the qualities and some of the benefits that can give an athlete. Then I'll have the conversation with an athlete where I'm like, hey, like if you're working out at school and they're making you squat, slide some fives under your heels, dude.
Yeah.
Your weight's going to go down.
Yep.
Initially, but in the long term, it's probably going to save your low back and you're going to get some stronger.
And you're even going to feel better.
It's just a better squat.
Yeah.
It's
going to make it
actually a squat,
yes,
which I could get into. But with him, And you know, he's wearing like these squishy fucking Adidas, you know, the same, you know, cloud foams that every high school kid has. And they're beat up and gray and his toes are like exploding through the front. And I'm thinking, oh boy, you know, here we go.
It's risky.
And he drops down perfectly vertical, well below 90 degrees, pops right out and just, and he's got the bar front racked and he just looks at me.
Yeah.
Like it was that good. And I said, holy shit. You know, I was like, rack it. Let's add some weight, you know, because then I want to see.
And did his heels come up?
No.
So he actually
they did
mobile.
It. Okay. Now, when the weight went up and I asked him to go a little lower in the bottom, yes, his heels did start to come up. But then that's also a conversation where I've kind of, unless it's like egregious in the sense where it's like, it's they're sacrificing stability or not.
Right.
I even now I've gotten to the point where if I see a little bit of that, I don't say anything there.
Oh yeah. Either. I'm not worried about what exactly the squat is.
Yes.
Like, I'm just curious how mobile his
so, but he
are.
Doesn't even, I implement a heel wedge just because it does still give him, he has to think less about maintaining his posture.
Yeah.
And you know, he's not, we're not talking a 10 degree pitch. Like his, just the back edges of his heels are on, you know, and a thing of beauty.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. No surprise to me. That fits. Yep. And so
he does complain of being quote unquote tight though. Like feedback he's gotten is that he's tight. His hips are tight.
Yeah. Well, so those types of athletes tend to, not have a lot of gluten ham development.
Yeah.
And they're poor hingers, and especially if they're tall, at some point their bones grew a lot and their muscles didn't grow as much with them, and so they got poor range of motion. And so that all fits with some observations I've made of the same type of people. So they actually, I think, really benefit from, like, you know, deep side lunges and like good hinging and that type of thing, to get posterior chain development and hip mobility. I think that's a deficit with that type of athlete, especially, in those teenage years. If nobody intervenes and like gets them mobile, they tend to be tight in the hips, bad hingers, bad rounding deadlifts, like that type of mechanic because, they just like to load their knees.
Speaking of people who, don't typically like to load their knees, Zach.
Hoopers.
It's an epidemic, right? So can you like give us some, you know, insight onto how you're able to do that with hoopers and like what kind of athletes you usually end up with? And
I think the, to get, you know, power five or beyond, like you're a one percenter of the 1%. So you're not going to be built like everybody else. So
yeah.
Our best
build different.
Athletes
build different.
usually have a short torso and long limbs, so it's like a spider almost. Mm-hmm. And if you want to make a great weightlifter, you're going to make them long torso, opposite basically. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the times we have to find movements that fit this spider type athlete, and it's usually not the same things that work with the general population or your average type athlete. So. Mm-hmm. We also have to figure out, you know, is this athlete not bending their knees because they have some sort of tendinopathy, tendonitis issue?
Yeah.
Which is, of course, common.
Yeah. Overused. I can't get over how many, like, games these high school athletes play
per week.
Like, it's crazy. And so that's another topic of not doing all that baseline stuff you were talking about.
We'll bring you back, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah, youth sports.
So I think you got to find that out. And then... watching how they sequence. So we'll see, you know, are they quad dominant athlete or a posterior chain dominant athlete? So do they create their vertical jump by going through their knees more, or their hips more? And then certain times of the year, you want to cater more towards that for like performance.
Yes.
For health, you want to almost do the opposite.
Right.
Yep.
So it's this constant battle of like health and performance. Health drives performance, but there's certain times of the year where like performance is the main thing we need. And there's other time where it's like, it's June. We just got done with the season. Health is where it's at. So it's basically trying to find movements, that they can succeed in, that usually kind of lets you know what direction.
Can I circle back to something you said earlier?
Yeah.
So you were talking about how a lot of the girls you get, they're not able to do the approach jump, the 2 foot approach jump. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's a deficit there because they've never had to do it really. One, well, I'll start with this one. Since you started doing it more, are there certain athletes that have an easier time getting it as opposed to others? And are they typically more, do they lean more towards that athletic 60 meter twitchier athlete? Or are they more towards the elastic? Like which one, kind of out of the context of what we've been talking about in the past 30 minutes, gets it the quickest?
For me, it's like the muscularly driven people. They're 2 foot jumpers.
Yeah,
like
long, that makes sense.
They lean into it. They get it fast.
Correct. The super twitchy people, like elastic, if you will, like once they figure out one leg, they take off like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of got to a point where I can look at someone and a certain body
you can expect.
Yeah, I'm like, Tim, muscularly driven.
Yeah.
Like, done.
Anybody over 200?
Yeah.
Unless you're DK Metcalf.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Uh-huh. And that like adds training considerations. Do we want to keep you? Like you jump whatever 36 inches, but yeah. It takes you an hour and a half to get off the ground.
Right. Like, yeah. It's not helpful.
Much, you know? So I think,
like I can jump high. I've yet to dunk on someone in a pickup basketball game. It's not because I don't have the height. It's because everyone sees it coming.
Well, I think the biggest
everyone sees it coming. They're like, there he goes. You know?
I think the biggest difference between like a really good athlete or even a great, and then like the elite is like how quickly they can create force.
Yes,
so
quickness.
It's like quick like this. So it's like, okay, you can jump 36 inches off the ground, but this other guy can only do 32, but he can get off the ground twice as fast as you.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's way more useful. Or she's going to be a way better athlete for sport.
Yes.
So it kind of makes you rethink the whole like you squat heavy, you jump high. It's like, okay, yes and no.
yeah, like it's that. Those are good.
Yeah.
But that's good.
Like Dan was
again, it's the context.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think extensive plyos need to be used a ton more with high school, middle school, college, professional athletes to kind of get more bang for your buck as far as like athletic development than the standard, you know, squat, deadlift, hang clean.
Yes.
You know, I love that kind of stuff. I think the more I do it, the more I realize like extensive plyos is where it's at.
It's crazy. Yeah. So this, you know, squat deep to jump high, get your squat up, jump higher. 100% valid when pieces are in place.
Correct.
When other pieces are in place. So even for myself personally, if I get my squat up, I jump better. Mm-hmm. It's pretty directly connected. Like maybe there's a little fatigue factor that you gotta, you know, rest a little bit, but like if I get stronger, I jump higher. Everything else is in place. You gotta certain D1 strength coach of a very athletic basketball team. Yeah, with those guys, squat more, jump higher, right? They got all the other pieces in place. With a 13-year-old kid who isn't a super freak athletically, you got way more pieces you got to develop before squatting.
Yeah.
Or at least alongside squatting. And you need to keep squatting like a smaller piece of the puzzle. Because you got a whole bunch of other things you got to develop. And it's a lot harder to like manufacture those things than it is to just manufacture strength.
So I got a question for you. So sport, I think it's more closely sport specific to run fast, jump, throw things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why if we're, you know, a standard sports performance coach, strength conditioning coach, why do so many people veer off of those basics and hardly ever train them and spend most of their time on these slow moving movements?
I mean, I like from my education process, I guess you could say, what I would say is people think that your sports just kind of cover it for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, oh, sports are explosive.
So you don't need to do that in the weight.
That's your explosive training.
Yeah.
So, you know, what you need on alongside that is just strength training. And I once subscribed to that belief. Now, I subscribed to that belief having had the experience of just squatting and jumping higher.
Right.
What I don't initially realize as a teenager or as a 20-year-old is, oh yeah, but you did all those jumps in the driveway when you were younger. Oh, you spent all those years playing basketball and sprinting up and down the court and jumping and blocking everybody's shot off the backboard. You know? and how many times did you dunk in practice? And how many times did you have your point guard throw you a lob and a drill,
yep.
you know, just to piss off a freshman who got dunked on? Like, you know, you spent all those years doing all those things.
Daniel was a menace.
Yes.
Daniel
I still remember that.
Daniel was a menace, dude.
The eye contact in practice, man. It'd just be like, they're setting up a drill. And I'm like, hey, we got a 2-on-1 advantage here. Like, hey, you know, yeah. put it up.
Throw it up.
Yeah, you don't think back to all those things you did that gave you all that talent. And now when you add strength, it works. Once upon a time, I was like, oh yeah, I just got my squat up and then I jumped higher. And then somebody else is emailing me questions. I'm like, dude, get your squat up, you'll jump higher. You know, like yeah. I once thought, yeah, you play a sport, like that's enough. You know, you don't think about all the things you developed without trying to as a kid. And that's not even talking about all the baseball and the hockey and the tree climbing and the jumping over fences and, you know, all the kid activity. And a lot of kids nowadays, they're not getting all that.
Well, can I?
It's so because of the evolution of the world. Yeah.
So something during...
By the way, great job with your daughter, Tim.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I've got that kid doing it all, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Her problem right now is that if she's not good at it, or if it's not exciting for her, she checks the fuck out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, full ADHD. Like, she's playing futsal right now.
Hey, you remember school, right?
It's like I can't say anything. I'm like, look, dude, I get it. You know what I mean? Like this, you're bored, you know. But when she's good at it, she's like, Donna. Anyway, I'll talk about my daughter for the next 30 minutes.
Yeah.
When it comes to play, though, right? You and I spent a lot of time over COVID. Like, we would go to Zilker Park. Mm-hmm. It's a park here in Austin, Texas. And we would just throw the football for distance. We would throw med balls for distance. We would take a racquetball, throw it as far as you can. And one of us would have to react to it and catch it off one hop. A lot of the workouts that we did today. Yeah. So we, you know, the med ball throw, and you got to throw it for distance. It can bounce one time. You have to touch it before it bounces the second time.
Mm-hmm.
So there... In sports performance, there are a lot of people who have taken this concept of kids not getting enough play being an integral part of good training, all things I subscribe to,
mm-hmm.
and then also infusing it into training. Dan, you, from what I... As long as I've known you, you tend to be more on like an objective, very logical, you know, the fact when you were talking about growing up, you said you were more mathematic and scientifically inclined.
Yeah.
No shit. I mean, it's what part of what makes you such an excellent coach. Can you talk about the intersection between trying to find ways to introduce play into workouts in a way that gives kids maybe what they're missing by playing only one sport or having not played mm-hmm. sports mm-hmm. while also tying into those things that are also, at least in my opinion, super important to good training, which is you have to measure big output. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, as always, I think there's a balance you got to find, and context is huge, right? So for the people who are like pushing play and criticizing metrics,
yeah,
I'm like, your athletes play their sport already all the time. They're already doing reactive agility constantly.
Yeah.
Like, what are you just giving them more of that for? Oh, it's a slightly different version of it. Okay. What is the value here? Right. Like really, they have movement variety. They have reactive agility. They have all these things built into their sport, and you're just going to give them more?
Mm-hmm.
No, don't criticize the metrics.
Yeah.
Say we need some play in our lives. Sure. Don't criticize other things. That's where I'm like, you're just being an idiot right now.
Yep.
Or maybe you're just trying to get attention right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think definitely you want the play for the kids. And if a kid doesn't have that, then put that more of that into their workouts.
Yes.
At the same time, kind of the place I like to operate, because I do have limited time with the people that I work with.
Yep.
And it is a metric driven business.
Yes.
Like that's sort of that's the context I'm in. Like there's, we need to produce results. At the end of the day,
there's a service you're providing, right?
Yes.
Like
yes.
Straight up.
We need to produce results.
It's like, well, you know, we played tag for 30 minutes and it's, you might not see it now.
Yeah.
But, you know, 2-3 more years of learning how to play tag correctly and it might help them in volleyball. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
Not a good sales pitch.
Anyway, Dad, you owe us for this month of training.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So where I tend to operate is... you know, I most of the kids play their sports enough, and a lot of them do play multiple sports. And so I'm not trying to make play a huge part of their thing.
Yeah.
I will use it to get the juices flowing in the warm up.
Nice.
The other element, and so that'll be, you know, a couple minutes.
Yes.
But the other element is usually the play aspect has output in it. So it's, okay, get on one knee. I'm going to toss this football up in the air, catch it before it lands.
Yeah.
So they're still accelerating fast.
Yep.
Right. And there's another task that's sort of complicating it, but they're getting out of that position as fast as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's still an output associated with that. Or it's, hey, run and jump over this thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's play, but they're jumping as high as they can.
There's a difference, you know, between play for the sake of play and the sake of saying that play is important.
Yes.
And then there's productive play,
yes,
which is what you're talking about.
Play with outputs.
Play with outputs, competitive.
Yes.
Play.
Yes.
Right? And then I think it becomes a matter of, because then it's like, okay, well, all athletes need this or athlete, you know. I also can't subscribe to that too, because I wouldn't say that this athlete needs to spend more time doing longer distance sprints.
Right.
And so does this, you know, every athlete has to do that. I wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, you wouldn't shift to the way extreme in either direction.
And I certainly wouldn't want to do that with play either.
Mm-mm.
But I seem to align with you too. And also too, like with me, you know, I think the context is so important with everything. You know, mm-hmm, you can almost answer every question with it depends. But, you know, if I have a group of high school or even some college age kids and I have a group, We're playing, bro.
Yeah.
We're playing tag. We're broad jumping for distance. We're chirping, you know.
Yes.
As you get into, you know, pro bowlers,
mm-hmm,
you got to be real judicial about the way that you're going to roll out play.
Uh-huh.
And there's two things. One, it's not necessarily because I don't think it's valuable. I do. But if so-and-so rolls an ankle, or tears an Achilles,
doing because something that we were playing tag.
That's a hard sell.
It's a hard sell. And then also too, there is an educational piece that you have to, you know, be able to say to an agent, to an outside entity, be like, we're not playing grab ass here. This is actually, so.
Yeah, this is serious training.
It's serious training. So I think that there's time and place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked you the question. I feel like I'm answering it now, but.
I mean, we're in alignment.
But yeah, like, you know, even like guys, pro, you know, kids on scholarship,
yeah,
like you gotta, you have to consider those things. And then for them too, it's like my high school kid who just wants to get faster and stronger and, you know, maybe doesn't have quite literally his generational wealth on the line.
Yeah.
You know, that's not to say like my NFL guys, like we do 5-10-5 races, bro.
Yes.
We do that.
Like, that's a form of play, racing.
It is. It's the ultimate
but
form.
It's racing, but output.
It's more safe.
Straight-based, there's a reason why you're doing it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like if a guy rolls his ankle doing the 10-5-10, that's not that ridiculous.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's like, you stepped stupid.
But if you did an obstacle course in your weight room and a guy twists his ankle on a balance beam.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, yep.
At that point, I think play is a really good job to get younger athletes or athletes who aren't interested in training into training.
Mm-hmm. Great point.
And hopefully, mm-hmm, if you're at the college or pro level, like I don't need to dangle
a carrot
in front of you to get engaged in being a development in your own process.
Also, at what point is it even effective?
That's
like, couldn't you make the argument that an athlete who is near the peak of their genetic potential? I think the crux of the problem is like some people might say that like, that's the missing piece. They need to do more obstacle courses. I don't subscribe to that.
I doubt it.
I doubt it too.
I really doubt it.
And then what if that is the missing piece? How frequently do we need to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any actual return on the investment in that? Because if the answer is no, even if it's the thing they need, but I have you for 6 weeks, but the results can't be produced.
What is 6 weeks
going to do? You know, and you need to do it for 6 months to see any benefit. What are we doing?
Well, yeah. And I'm just like, yeah, with a high level athlete, you know, whatever sport they're in, mastering that sport, that might be the missing piece.
True.
But that's sport specific. That's practice. That's technical and tactical expertise. Mm. It is not obstacle courses.
Right.
It's not random games that you play.
Yeah.
Like it's learning football. Mm-hmm. It's learning basketball. Like, what are we going now with, like, sort of general technical and tactical skills?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a reach.
That is a reach. It's like, okay. Okay, learning how to play this tag game, or like I like to set up like a figure eight. One athlete starts on the other and the other has, I say, go, you've got 7 seconds to tag the other guy, right? So there's change of direction, mm-hmm. there's deception. Obviously, competitive guys are diving over the cones to try and tag each other. But like, I can do that with my high school kids. But if I have a Micah Parsons, because he will, bro.
Yeah.
He's gonna get you. He's an actual lion. He's gonna fucking tag you, dog. Like, he's gonna do whatever it takes. Yeah, I don't need that. I don't.
Yeah.
I could rein him in, you know. But like, you know, I'll take the high school kids and we'll go play pickleball for 15 minutes to start the session,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise they can't focus long enough, right. Which relatable.
Yeah.
You know, I was that kid.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'll say, we'll get 3 minutes in the warm up. I'm like, put your fucking shoes on.
Okay. Right.
Come with me. I say it just like that. Yeah, I do. And they're so happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get back in there and they hit squat PRs on the pendulum because I don't trust them to do anything else.
And there's personality types there too.
Yeah. Where
some people are going to jump at that play in the warm up. And then 2 minutes later, it's like they're ready to do anything.
Yes.
And then there's more reserved, more thoughtful people that want instruction on how to do things.
Yes.
And just giving them a game or giving them a task.
Because actually anxiety.
For them, they're like, I don't, you know.
More constraints.
Like, how am I supposed to, I don't really know the form. And it's like, good.
Yeah.
Don't know the form.
That's the point.
But so you gotta take that in consideration too. You know, it, the different type of people. So a lot of things to talk about, but my main thing is, okay, yeah, little play, we need it. Movement variety, yeah, we need it. But we're trying to get more athletic here.
Yeah.
And random games may have some role, but like, come on, guys, let's not overstate the value of this.
Yes.
And let's not start criticizing metric improvements as like somehow being outdated or like not as good as your tag game or something. Like, come on.
Yeah. I think with most things, it's, you know, finding some sort of middle ground or balance. And then I think there's also something to be said for just being honest around, like, this is what I prefer.
Yeah.
This is what I like to do.
Yeah.
And the people,
I think this is going to work.
I think this is going to work. And the athletes that end up coming to you and sticking around are going to be what? The ones that respond well to that and really fucking like doing it, you know? And if that's it, then great. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, I agree. It's like to say that somehow diminishes the value of something much more objective.
Yes, yes.
Is logically inconsistent to me. You know?
Yeah, good. So we're...
Zach, since we're on this topic, because I feel like in a setting that you're in, the handcuffs you have, because I'm still, I'm still in the private sector. Like I can, if I wanted to have guys do cartwheels and, you know, for 15 minutes as the warm up, I theoretically could do that.
Totally. This might not come back.
Yeah.
Or maybe they do. Maybe you find a good group.
Some will, some won't.
Yeah. Right.
Some will love it.
Like, yeah, you're right. Some would. Yeah. But then others would be like, that Tim Riley training's a fucking moron.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But Zach, tell me, like, you know, can you find time for stuff like that? If you can, how much? And then do you feel the pressure of the constraint to be able to, you know, do things that you would otherwise do?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is like whatever we do, I have to be able to back it up to head coach, athlete, sports med, athletic trainer, potentially parents, agents, pro teams, whatever. And you're under such a big lens with everything that unless I can, I always joke, like, I had a mentor say, like, unless if you can't back something up in like the court of law of why you did a certain drill or a certain lift or prescribe mm-hmm. that kind of load, then you probably shouldn't be doing that. Because a lot of these athletes we work with, like, they're going to go make $20 million in a few years yeah. or whatever. So it's like, although, and the athletes understand, like, hey, why can't we play this tag game we saw? And I'm like, if one of you guys rolls your ankle playing tag, probably won't happen. But if one of you guys does,
yeah,
I don't need to have that meeting with coach.
Right.
Because we wanted to play capture the flag. Mm-hmm. And it's tough for me to.
We needed to do this.
Correct.
Yeah.
Explain to coach, like,
yeah.
why we wanted to do this.
Well, they really wanted to.
This yeah. is going to help us win the Big 12.
Yes. So we'll find different ways to, like, have fun.
Sorry, SEC.
I feel like it's just like novel training. It's like, do you guys want to not waste your time? Because you probably get benefit out of that stuff. But I know we get benefits out of running fast, jumping high, mm-hmm. lifting weights,
yeah.
recovering correctly. Like, I know we get results from that. So let's stick to that. And when you're at your other 23 hours out of the day, if you guys want to go play tag in the park, bet.
Go yeah,
do
yeah.
that. Go do swim. Go
don't tell coach. But
I always tell him, like, I'm the fun sponge around there as far as, like, no, we're not going to go have.
Yeah, I'm the fun.
Like, as fun, fun as I
I've
get.
I've never heard that.
I draw it all out of the yeah. environment. Yep.
Yeah. As fun as I get is like med ball, volleyball.
Sure.
And yeah. we'll do that like
so fucking
once
fun.
A Friday, like maybe like at the end of the summer. And I mm-hmm. hate that day just because I can't have someone jam a finger.
Yeah.
Twist yep. an ankle oh. in the sand or something. Step on a stick in the whatever.
Mm-hmm. See, we do that almost once a week here yeah. in NFL offseason.
And that's,
if we have the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's like, and I'll just be like they'll get done doing their quote unquote tissue prep, which is kind of long and arduous. I wouldn't do half of it, but like, I'm also not the only coach here. So yeah. I also like to let people cook, mm-hmm. you know, that's another rabbit hole we don't have time for. but we go do that and I'll say, well, we won't do any of the warm up. We just go out there and start doing that
yeah,
and do it, you know, and like, it'll end up going. Cause here's the thing. It's like, if I say we're going to do this for 10 minutes, no chance. No, it's going to be a best out of going. Three.
Yeah,
yeah dude.
Arguing.
That's yeah. Uh-huh. Whatever. We're going to talk yeah. shit and people are going to chirp and someone's going to get mad uh-huh. and they're going to say, no, that was out of bounds. Nuh-uh, it was in, which is the best. I live for that. Uh-huh. That's my perfect.
Cause we know whatever that you do after that, they're going to be ready to roll.
Oh, we're doing cleans.
Yeah. yeah.
Yes. Big,
that hit the line.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yes, we're doing Danny ball, and then we're going right in, and then let's work up to a heavy single.
Yeah,
on yep. clean. Yeah,
yep.
So fun.
Yeah, so it sounds like your context, you can still do competition.
Yeah,
and that's essentially the form of play that it is.
Correct,
but it's like either sprinting or jumping in some
yeah, we
form.
Can do races,
but it's still
or
competitive
stuff. But
yeah.
it's just hard for me. To if I don't know if this fun play drill really translates to what we're doing, to
yeah.
waste their time figuring that out when
right.
I know like a bunch of these other drills work.
These definitely have value.
Correct.
Yes. Yep. Makes perfect sense. Yeah. So just going back to the athletic development is hard thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully from this talk, people can tell there's like a lot of things to think about and it's complex. I just have a couple of things sitting in my head that we mentioned yesterday when we were sort of prepping for this, and that's just the examples. So we already kind of talked about like the jumping background.
Mm-hmm.
We already talked about sprinting and like how you actually need training volume or like running volume. Other ones that I considered were like throwing, like trying to develop throwing velocity.
Yeah.
And again, there's this idea of you just got to throw fast. Limited number of reps in order to develop that. And it's like, well, no, if you actually look at high level pitchers in baseball or something, they've done a whole lot of reps that were not fast, mm-hmm. right? You grow up playing baseball, you go to baseball practice, playing catch, all this stuff. Like most of the throws you do
were not maximal.
Are nowhere near maximal.
Yeah.
And you do a whole lot of reps of that. And then that builds up tolerance and capacity and gives you that easy throwing motion. And then when you crank it up, you got more to give, right? And so it's that same principle of, yeah, you want the intense, you want the measuring, but you also want the reps, the volume. The jump world, I was thinking about, it's a little different. Like you need the jump practice. We don't typically think about like sub-maximal jumping, but that's more like the extensive plyos. That's more
yeah,
like the warm-up skips.
Yeah.
Or like if you're a dunker, you go, you do start doing layups,
yep.
shooting jump shots. you know, all these little things, your little, you know, two-step little one-hander, right? You do a lot of things on the way to the big jumps that are actually submaximal. So that's general theme. Like you actually need a lot of volume of the activity to go along with the intense output stuff. And then the other one that I mentioned yesterday was the grip strength, where I talked about the most reliable way we know to develop grip strength is like daily manual labor or frequent manual labor. And actually I have an anecdote about this. I had a job in college working in a warehouse where I was driving a forklift and then also
Forklift Dan.
And then, oh yeah. And then
are you certified?
I did a little 90-second test at the warehouse. I got my skills up for a little bit there. But then it was, you know, we were assembling like a collection of ingredients on a pallet to like, it was a powdered food manufacturer. So that involved like grabbing somewhere between, you know, 30 pound and 55 pound bags and like stacking them on a pallet, like getting the right number of each one on there and stuff. And so it was a lot of picking up bags and tossing them and stacking them and all this stuff. And I had one of my coworkers, and one day he was like competitive dude, and he like decided he wanted to arm wrestle me. And we just, he was a big dude, he's like 6'7". We straight up deadlocked and just nobody won. Like neither one of us could move each other. At that time I was working full time or close to full time. Mm-hmm. I ended up cutting that job down to just weekends, going back to school full time. And, but he and I stayed friends. But so then I was working like 1 or 2 days a week and mostly just driving the forklift, not a lot of bag throwing. Mm-hmm. And, so like months later, I'm working at the bar as a bouncer and he's hanging out with me while I'm working and he wants to arm wrestle again.
My arm wrestling buddy.
Hell and, yeah. Arm wrestling at the bar. Let's fucking go.
And he buries me in like 2 seconds. He's like, "What happened, dude?" And I was like, "I'm not throwing bags anymore."
Yeah.
I was lifting.
Right.
I was gripping bars hard for short periods of time.
Right.
While lifting, I wasn't throwing bags. I didn't have the volume.
Well, if you look at those construction dudes, like the forearms and those.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so are they doing maximal strength grip?
Probably.
No. They're just picking stuff up, moving it, you know.
There's a lot of parallels. I think you make a really good point. So, it's like the best training for hypertrophy, for example. It's not going to failure.
Yeah.
It's not taking it to the edge. It's living for as long as you can, closer,
consistently.
Consistent, good stimulus, enough. Mm-hmm. To make adaptation, but not so much that for such a brief period of time where like it's not even, what would be the way to explain that or articulate that?
Where it's like building like, capacity.
Yeah.
Like robustness. Like repeated exposures to whatever.
It's like, do you really, like, I guess you could argue, it's like, how much recovering are you getting from a blip on the map? How much adaptation?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you actually get?
Like changes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I think even maximum strength, right? Like generally people don't train maximum strength by just maxing something out twice per week.
Right.
There might be windows where that would work.
Yes.
New lifter, certainly. You could do just about any strength protocol with a new lifter. After maybe a phase of like high volume and stuff, maybe if you just like did singles twice per week, you might, you know, see some changes. Mm-hmm. Over time, it's not really the way we develop strength.
Right.
And I think it's just the, you know, one way to explain it would be like just the complexity of the human system. It's like there's a lot of pieces that have to, that you're trying to like bring along with you as you get better at anything. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, if it was like, you know, just a matter of fiber typing, then it would be very minimal volume, just maximum intensity. And that would probably, you know, that would give you like the most fast twitch fiber adaptation.
Right.
Because it low amount of work. Oh, but it's not just about fiber typing. Mm-hmm. Right. What about the nervous system? What about the structure? Right. What about the tendons, the fascia? What about titin protein in the muscle for the anatomy people out there? Right. Like there's so many elements there that you're trying to train. And yeah, high intensity twice per week might be a way to get fast twitch fibers. It might be a way even to train the nervous system, because the nervous system likes rest.
Yep.
But it's not the best way to develop the structure for it.
Right.
It's not the best way to build up the tendons. It's not the best way. I mean, talk about the cardiovascular system. You can talk about so many things anatomically, physiologically that you're trying to develop to contribute to that. And yeah, like that, if you just latch onto one training method, it's like, you know, that might be the best thing for one part of the formula. But like overall, you got to do something a lot. And if you do it a lot maximally, then you just run yourself into the ground. Mm-hmm. So you got to do it a lot submaximally and then complement that with some maximal general principle for adaptation of the body, I guess.
You know what this all brings me back to is that improving athleticism is hard.
It sure is.
It is hard, dude. Guys, we're out of time, but this was awesome. A ton of fun. Everyone, if you're listening, I appreciate you joining us. This was the first episode of Coach Me Up. Stay tuned and be on the lookout for more episodes. I'm sure we're going to have Daniel Bach back on at some point in the future. Dan, thanks for coming. Dan, where can people find you? And any parting words?
Parting words are just respect the complexity of the human body, respect the diversity between people, and respect the nuance and the complex nature of trying to manipulate the human body, which is extraordinarily complicated, manipulate that organism into performing better. It is not easy. It's not simple. Even though sometimes solutions are simple, the process and all the arriving at solutions is just not this, you know, step one, step two, easy kind of thing. So yeah, just have some appreciation for that process. And yeah, for the fellow coaches listening, like, that's the fun part. It's the puzzle. It's trying to solve it, right?
Don't run from the coaching.
Yeah. It's like, just embrace that challenge. And it makes the victories so much greater when you say, you think about how much had to go into this. Mm-hmm. And you know, all the years of work that somebody puts in. So anyway, that's parting message. Jump.science on Instagram, speed.sci on Instagram. Those are best forms of, content from me. So it's been a fun chat with you guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming through and kicking our butt in the workout today.
Yeah, man.
It's a good time.
It was. All right, guys, signing off. Thank you.
Peace.